is Megan Francis, and you're listening to the Kitchen Hour podcast. I'm here to keep you company while you get dinner on the table and help you set aside more time for family, food, and fun. This week, my guest is Melissa D'Arabian. She is a former winner of the show The Next Food Network Star, also has a show on Food Network called $10 Dinners, and a new book by the same name. Welcome, Melissa.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. So, okay, so I have to get to this part right away. Your daughters are 7 and under right now. And that must mean that when you were on the Food Network Star, they were 5 and under?
Actually, they were 3 and under. They were 3, 2, 1, and 1.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little crazy. So I have to say, you know, I was used to 2, 1, 0, and 0. So when people say 7 and under, I'm like, well, actually, that actually sounds like a normal,
right.
You know, very workable number.
Right.
2 and under, 3 and under, 4 and under. That felt a little bit overwhelming. But
so your youngest
seven and
were
under,
twins?
7, 6, 5, and 5, they're all in school.
Oh, my gosh.
Easy peasy.
Your youngest then were twins at the time.
I'm sorry, there's
your youngest
of
the
twins?
Yeah, and how? And they were under a year old at the time?
They were, when I went off to Food Network Star, they were 1.
Oh my gosh. And to me, that's like the most challenging age, so I can't even imagine doing that with 2 kids at that age. Oh my gosh.
My husband and I joked that that I'm probably the only person who, when I went off to do Food Network Star, found myself in a more relaxed, rested state than my life at home.
You know what?
Everyone else was all stressed out and like, oh, we're getting no sleep. Meanwhile, I'm like, you know what? No one has woken me up in the middle of the night and, you know, 7 weeks, all is good.
And you're like, it's like being on vacation, right? So kind of, except with all the pressure of, you know, being on television and trying to win this.
Yes, and in all fairness, vacation with people you didn't choose to be on vacation.
Well, yeah.
Which is really, you know, half the battle of vacation, right? Is having people that you want to spend a lot of time with you. So being on vacation without your family is not really all that vacation-y, but yes, it certainly wasn't more tiring than my life at home.
Yeah, I understand that. So then you went from being, you were an at-home mom, and then you kind of like literally overnight went from that to having this sort of completely different life. I'm sure your life has totally changed in a lot of ways.
You know what? It really did. And you know what? You're right. It almost was overnight, because I won Food Network Star. I actually won it in April, and then it didn't air on camera, on TV until August.
Right.
So there was this period of like a number of months where I knew I had won, but no one else knew I had won.
And you couldn't tell anybody.
it was sort of this, you know, this sort of, you know, in between world.
Right.
And then suddenly, you know, when the finale aired in August and then $10 Dinners aired the next week, it suddenly like went into hyper overdrive. So it really was very much overnight. So it was a big switch. It was a big switch to go from being a stay-at-home mom to being a full-time working parent.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you know, this show is all about, it's all about kind of making time for dinner and getting food on the table. And I just keep thinking about how that would change getting dinner time on the table. Like when you're at home with the kids, you kind of have this, I know it's hard and stressful, but you kind of have this routine you can get into and you can be like, I'm going to shop on this day. I'm going to meal plan on that day. And then suddenly you don't have that opportunity anymore.
True. But, you know, it is also true what they say about, you know, if you want to get something done, hand it off to a busy person, you know, because I am somebody, I operate better when I have lots of things on my plate.
Mm-hmm.
I spent my whole life because I had this career in finance and I put myself through business school and I've always walked around thinking I'm this self-motivated person who really works hard. And, I'm under that impression, you know, for a number of years. I didn't have my kids until I was in my late 30s. So, you know, I had a pretty long career before I became a stay-at-home mom. And I found out something very interesting about me when I became a stay-at-home mom, which is I am actually not self-motivated at all. And I mean, it was sort of a surprise to me because I thought, well, I've always been, you know, the good student, the good, you know, it turns out I'm really good with deadlines and I'm really good operating under pressure and under stress. I deliver well on, you know, standardized exams and I'm good under pressure. And I'm less good when there's this sort of big empty abyss where yeah. I'm just required to come up with my own structure. It was a struggle for me because I didn't have that sense. I had to create my own deadlines and organization, that's not my strength. It's just not my strength. So it was being a stay-at-home mom really challenged me in a lot of ways to get better at things that I frankly didn't have to worry about.
Right.
When I was in the corporate world, I don't have to worry about idle time. You know, when you're working 80 hours a week and you're under a million deadlines and you're under a lot of pressure and whatever, you know, you have different problems. But one of my problems was never, oh, I just have so much time and I just need to organize right. stuff. No, I mean, I work well under deadlines.
Yeah.
So that was a big change for me.
That makes a lot of sense. And actually, I work from home, but I've been working mom since since my third child was born. And so I had just a couple of years where I was really more like an at-home mom. And I call that period of my life sort of like forced inertia. Like I didn't get anything done because I didn't have to get anything done really. I just had all this time that I could if I wanted to. And there were no deadlines and I didn't have a supervisor and there was nobody out there with expectations of me. So it's interesting. We kind of, I think sometimes think we don't have any time or we're too busy and maybe we're not always busy enough or we just don't understand ourselves.
Well, and I think people work in different ways. So yeah. I think that I know a lot of people who are, like my husband is very much, he is much better with the slow and steady and the self-imposed deadlines. And, just a perfect example of every time we move, he is the kind of guy who's like, you know what, I want to do 3 boxes a night so that when we move in 2 months, it's not going to be a big disaster. I'm, to me, the 33 bucks, it weighs on me. It bugs
right.
me. Like we just operate differently.
Yeah.
So, it was just, it was just a very interesting, sort of transition into, stay-at-home mom land. Also, stay-at-home mom land for me, was a little bit challenging, because I was so used to being in the corporate world where you get feedback based upon, the work you put out there.
Right.
In the corporate world, I work my tail off, I stay late, I, make the presentation amazing, I work at it, I deliver it, and people are impressed, I get promotions or I get accolades. As a stay-at-home mom, how the day went had very little to do with my input level.
Mm-hmm.
I could, pack the diaper bags ahead of time, plan to go to the children's museum, and then we're going to go to lunch, and then,
right.
I'll have this great idea. And then, the whole day, will spin out of control because one of my daughters has a meltdown or whatever.
Right.
And that lack of, that sort of feedback mechanism that is so predictable for the most part in the corporate world and relatively unpredictable
right.
in the stay-at-home mom world, I wasn't used to that. I wasn't used to putting in effort and not getting the rewards. Or we have all had this, as a stay-at-home mom, where it's like one of those days where you're like, oh, I didn't end up making dinner, but it ended up being awesome because, the kids and I, we ended up making, a chicken stir fry that ended up being so much fun. Like, it just, you have these gems of these moments that you didn't create. Like, you're reaping the benefits of something that honestly you didn't do. Whereas the corporate world is just not like that. For the most part, there's a very predictable sense of cause and effect and input and output. And that link is not completely broken. I am aware of the fact that if I do set out the clothes the night before and pack the diaper bag the night before, my day does generally go better. But it's not 100% causal relationship.
Right.
And, but the flip side of that is, I really learned how to sort of be more in the moment and sort of to let go of expectations and let go of evaluating my performance. Because, in the corporate world, I'm always evaluating my performance. So, as a mom, I sort of let a little bit of that go, which, it's been a great counterbalance to my personality.
And you're right that you can do everything right as a mom and have things still go wrong, or you can do, you can just totally slack off and have like the best day. There's no,
it's,
you know,
so true. It's,
it can go either way. And that's true for working moms too, because like you said, there's, yeah, you can put, lay out the clothes the night before, you can pack the lunches, or you can, you know, plan the meals, but in the end, things are still going to go the way they're going to go. It's just life. It's so unpredictable.
It is. And it's just, it's a little less predictable on the, you know, you put kids into the mix and it's just,
right.
it makes it all just less predictable.
It's exponential.
But, but for me, that was a really good balance to, you know, to what I had been used to. So it was a big change. And then going back to being a working mom was yet a whole other kind of transition. My transition from working, you know, from working to stay-at-home mom was a harder transition for me than transitioning from stay-at-home mom back to working mom. I think that for me it was that way.
Yeah, I think that that's not really, really pretty common. I don't think a lot of people like to admit it or talk about it, but I think that if you talk, you know, quietly with women on the playground, you hear that a lot. It's like, because you lose that identity or you lose that structure that really helps your day kind of have some bones to it. And like, you know, when to do, you know, what to do when.
For me, and I know a lot of moms, you know, in the stay-at-home mom world, you know, they really, found ways to create their own structure. Mm-hmm. And they embraced that. You know, some people mm-hmm. are better at not embracing that structure.
Right.
You know, even now, like even working from home, I sometimes find myself a little bit in that sort of, that is one of my biggest challenges is working from home in my job. Because I don't go to an office, and I do much better when I've got, you know, when I'm planning a season and I've got to be testing recipes or, you know, writing a book for me, for instance, is a bit of a challenge. I love writing, but I am, it's a challenge for me because writing is really a solitary effort that you're sort of doing on your own. I mean, I do well when we have, okay, next Thursday, this deadline, you know, like when it's broken down into deadlines, I would be nowhere without my editor who doesn't, you know, without an editor cracking a whip on me. So, my husband is very good at, you know, on the weekends, I'm like, you know, I really want us to get this done for the backyard, whatever. And I'm like, really? I just want to lounge,
right.
You know? So, my go-to is actually, you know, I can get into that inertia and not move. I need to keep moving. Once I'm moving, I keep moving. And, you know, that's just how I operate.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all operate differently, don't we?
Yeah,
you know,
we
a lot
do.
Of people say, oh, that's a lot of energy. It's just, I know me. I, you know, once I stop, I'll stop. So.
Well, you know what makes you tick, and that's what counts. I mean, everyone, you know, as a mom or as a business person or whatever, it's like you have to understand there's like the way people say it should be, and then there's the way it is. You got to like work with the way it is, the way you really are, and that's
true. You know, that's exactly true. I think a lot of it is just sort of self-knowledge and self-acceptance, you know,
right.
Understanding that, you know, we're, you know, we all have different strengths and different different talents and different gifts, and I really do like to sort of focus on, you know, what I do bring to the table and stress less about, you know, where I'm, you know, less strong.
Right. So I have to talk about the next Food Network star for a minute, because I have to tell you, I have watched the show every season, but yours was the only season I watched beginning to end.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was really rooting for you. I was like, oh my gosh, Melissa has to get it. And the only one I didn't watch the last episode because I was so stressed out watching it. I had to like leave the room. And I don't really get into reality television that much, so that's saying something. I was like so nervous. I was watching and like, you know, I don't remember exactly how it went. There was three of you left, wasn't there? And then they bring
no,
up the
No, there
three.
Were two of us.
There was just
yeah,
two?
Yeah, my season, there were two of us.
Okay. I can't remember how, like I said, I didn't even watch the last episode all the way through because I was so stressed. But, and I don't remember where it was in the show, but at one episode you had this concept, which I thought was just really smart. And I'm hoping you can remind me of it because I've kind of forgotten. You had like this idea for a show and it was going to be four steps. Basically it was like, I think aromatics first. And then I don't remember, like you had this four step process for getting
chicken.
Any meal. Yes. And I just thought that was genius. Okay, so describe, please, because I've forgotten.
Well, you know, and in all fairness, it's really just sort of a simplified way of saying, you know, a sautéed chicken, you know, in pan sauce.
Right.
So it's very, you know, very simple. This is just taking a very classic age-old concept mm-hmm. and just, you know, turning it into four steps. So I did the four-step chicken in the finale mm-hmm. of a Food Network Star. And then and I've done it on my show with I've done four-step fish, four-step pork, four-step whatever. And there's also four-step chicken in my book, in the cookbook. So the four-step chicken is really just dredging and sauteing your chicken.
Okay.
And then step two is aromatics. So anything that, you know, aromatics, vegetables, anything you need to saute up, you know, afterward. And then deglazing with liquid. And then putting the, you know, chicken back in and finishing the sauce, usually with like a drizzle of olive oil or a little bit of butter or, you know, a little bit of, you know, tomato paste or whatever, you know, whatever finishings, a little dab of cream or whatever it is that you want to do to finish your sauce and kind of pull it together and make it a nice sauce.
Well, see, what I love is that you say it's so simple, and it is, and it's a basic cooking thing. But I think if you're not comfortable in the kitchen or you didn't grow up learning how to cook, you don't know where to start. So I thought that was so smart.
And that's why it's meant to be sort of a place to start. You know, the idea is that you can almost take any flavor profile and turn it into four steps. Just divide it into your protein, your vegetables and aromatics, and your liquids, and then whatever you're going to finish the sauce with, which could be literally just a pat of butter if you wanted to. So, you know, all you got to do is, you know, saute up the chicken. I usually dredge it in a little bit of flour just to give it a nice brown crust, and, you know, that's just a nice, and also the flour will help thicken the sauce a bit. But dredge a little flour, you know, saute up the chicken, remove the chicken, and then cook up your, you know, the veggies, the, you know, the solid stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then deglaze with, you know, you know, half a cup, 3/4 of a cup of liquid. That could be, you know, wine, lemon juice. It could be, you know, orange juice. It could be whatever liquid you got. You know, a little stock. It could even be water. It doesn't matter. Just deglaze the pan with the liquid, and then put the chicken back in and let it cook through and finish the sauce. So it's the idea is that you could even be like at a restaurant and ask. You know, the waiter if there's a dish that you really love, and say, you know, what are the, you know, main five ingredients in this?
Right.
And they'll tell you, oh, you know, mushrooms, red peppers, onions, and garlic, and, you know, white wine and tomato paste. I'm making it up. well, then all you got to do is go home and, you know, look at that and divide it up into, well, what's the stuff that's solid, what's the stuff that's liquid, and then, you know, and you got your chicken, and you can kind of recreate that flavor profile.
Right.
So it's a really great starter recipe, but it's also a great place for people to start cooking without a cookbook.
Yeah, and I like that because I have a horrible memory when it comes to cookbooks, so I'm the person who will just, like, look at the recipe and then I'll feel like I have to look at it a million times. Like, you know, I obsess over it. I'm looking at it and then I go to do one thing. I'm like, oh shoot, I forgot what the recipe said. Then I have to go back and look at it again. So just to have a framework in mind is really nice, especially when you just don't have that background of really being a strong cook. It's really helpful.
Yeah, and it is helpful. And, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love cookbooks. And, you know, and I do the same thing when I have a cookbook. I, like, get it going, and I go back and I check. I always read through the whole recipe before I begin so that I get a good sense. And, you know, and generally speaking, you know, I can remember it because, you know, I have sort of a context of, like, oh, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to saute. We're going to, you know, deglaze. So I have a general sense, you know, how recipes go for the most part and what would make sense, you know, in making a cake. You know, pretty much they're sort of same steps that you follow no matter what you're doing. But yeah, you know, we all want to also be able to cook without the cookbook.
Right.
So, you know, this is sort of a great one that's sort of easy enough to execute that the idea is that you don't have to use your cookbook every single time.
Right. That makes a lot of sense to me. We're going to wrap up this segment, but Melissa and I will be back in just a couple of seconds to talk more about her book and her show. And I'm really excited. So stay with us. Wondering what to make for dinner tonight? Check out the show notes for my chat with Melissa D'Arabian, and you'll find a link to her French onion soup recipe. It's at thekitchenhour.com/episode4. thekitchenhour.com/episode4. Check it out. Hi, Hi, everyone. Back again with Melissa D'Arabian from the Food Network. She was a season 5 winner of the Next Food Network Star and is the host of $10 Dinners on every day at 1:30 p.m. Eastern on the Food Network, and also the author of $10 Dinners, 140 Recipes and Tips to Elevate Simple Fresh Meals Any Night of the Week. Hello again, Melissa.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, so we were talking about her book and also her 4-step process for making chicken and, you know, basically anything, which you'll have to listen to the first segment to hear more about that. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about the book, because one thing I love is that this is all about, these are $10 dinners. So these are dinners that you can make for 10 bucks. And they're not, like, I think a lot of times when I know, for when I think of what's going to be an inexpensive meal, I think like crock pot or, just kind of the cheap meals we've all thought of that are that have kind of gotten a reputation for being cheap. But there's nothing that seems cheap about these restaurants or these recipes. They're like so classy, and they're like the kinds of things you would get at a restaurant, which I really appreciate, because I like to eat well, but meeting on a budget. So right. I appreciate that. Is that kind of how you grew up eating and learning how to cook, or did you sort of teach yourself this as you became an adult?
Well, I grew up on a budget. My mom was in college when she had us, and then in medical school. So we grew up on a very tight budget. So I think the budget gene came from my mom, for sure. I think that you combine that with my tastes as they have changed over the years.
Right.
and I think that, both of those together came together for $10 dinners. But, you're right. I think that the cookbook and the show, I really try to bust the myth that cooking inexpensively has to be, it has to feel like you're depriving yourself or feel like you're on a budget. There are lots of ways to bring in, inexpensive ingredients. For instance, one of my favorite ingredients is the white bean, white dried beans. You can saute them up and, make these beautiful creamy beans that, at an Italian restaurant will be a very expensive appetizer. You can include white beans into a bruschetta. I do a California bruschetta in my cookbook. And, it's filling, delicious, satisfying, and, super inexpensive. So there are a lot of ways to, to save money without feeling deprived. I don't ever want to feel, $10 dinners is really about it's a celebration of food and being a good steward of our resources. It's really not intended to be I'm on a budget, poor me.
Yeah.
It's really
go
about
get some
being,
spam.
Being a, it's meant to be, a celebration of eating well and not overspending.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you say in here, being a good steward of your budget. I think that's something that, like, so many moms and increasingly dads can really identify with. I love your focus. One of the things I'm writing about this week is food waste. And for a long time, I think that I was kind of under the impression that if I bought everything in bulk and shopped ahead of time and bought mass quantities of food all at once, that I would save money in the long run. And I realized that actually food waste was one of my biggest food expenditures. And that surprised me when I finally got knocked over the head with that realization. And I love that you have strategies in here for not wasting food. That's just so smart. And I don't think everyone thinks of that. We think cheap,
true.
more,
Yeah, people think about, the point of sale.
Right.
Part of savings. And that's a big part of the story is, what you spend at the register. But that's only part of the story. A lot of budget cooking is about inventory management or ingredient management, and managing the assets, if you will, that you do have at home. So, it's about, small things like, doing the 5-minute menu plan every week, just checking your fridge, and seeing what needs to be used up. Is there a tub of sour cream that you used half of and it's just sitting there waiting to be used up again? Use that in, to kind of create your recipes or your plans for the week. I'm a big fan of saying the ingredient you throw out is the most expensive ingredient in your house.
Right.
I don't care how cheap it was when you bought it. If you were throwing it out, that right there is the most expensive ingredient in your home. So, and I will tell you, it just happened to us yesterday, the day before yesterday, where, you know, our one of, you know, we have too many fridges because we have so many people, and one of our crisper drawers just got neglected, and and I opened it up and I realized that there were some vegetables in there that were just beyond saving, and I'll tell you what, it just drove me nuts. You know, I mean, okay, it was only, you know, the green onions and like a cucumber that were just, you know, just beyond repair. And when they turned to liquid, then they're beyond repair. And, you know, and I threw them away, and I just thought, you know, okay, you know, I did my best. It was a fail on those green onions and that one cucumber, you know, but I just remember thinking, you know, when I'm throwing it into my trash, I just thought, okay, that's the most expensive ingredient in my house today. And it's just a good reminder. I don't like to do that. You know, not only do I not like to waste the money, it just seems, in a way, almost disrespectful you know, of this earth who's creating this food, and I'm just buying it and not taking care of it and throwing it away. It just seems to be not a very holistic view of sort of my place on this world and the food that I'm given. So it just, I feel more grateful and more connected when I'm, you know, purchasing food in season, taking care to use the food and not throw it away. And it just feels like better living to me.
I think that maybe a little bit of it also comes from being raised. I was also raised by on a very tight budget with a single mom, and throwing food away was like, it's like anathema. Like, you don't do that. And as I got older and maybe had a little more disposable change in my pocket, it did become easier to throw things away, and I'm uncomfortable with that. So it's like every time I throw something away, there's like this little voice in my head, like, you shouldn't be doing that. You know? So it helps keep me honest.
Well, and but it's true. You know, people ask me, sometimes they ask me, well, you know, now that you're on TV, you know, do you still cook these $10 dinners? And, you know, yes, I do, because it's about so much more than, I don't have any money, so this is all I can afford. Right. Do you know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. I have spent a good portion of my life in that world of I don't have a lot of money. This is all I can afford. You know, so I certainly feel like that has informed who I am, you know, especially in the kitchen, but who I am just around the house. Like, I'm a nut about, like, lights being left on, and, you know, I'm definitely of the generation, well, you know, what do you think? We own part of the electric company, you know, so money doesn't grow on trees. Yeah, all of that is part of my, you know, my makeup. But it's really about so much more than that. It's not about the, you know, necessarily the pennies in my wallet. Although yes, I'm always on a budget. I feel like, you know what, if I ever get to the stage, or anybody ever gets to the stage where they just have so much money that they don't mind throwing things away all the time, I say, you know what, take all that extra cash and maybe put someone else's kid through college, or you know, do something with it. So you know, I am not at the stage in my life where I just have so much cash that I can just throw it away. I feel like, you know what, if I can just throw it away, then you know what, there's still something else I could be doing with it. There's always a better use for one's money than throwing it away. Always. Just as a matter of philosophy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it drove me nuts to throw away those green onions, even though honestly it was like 12 cents worth of green onions. Right. You know, can I afford 12 cents? Yes, I can. Yeah. The truth is I can, but it doesn't matter. It's just, that's just wrong. So it's about something much bigger than just, you know, money in my wallet. It's about, you know, being smart and being a good steward and sort of respecting, you know, the work that we do. You know, with my husband, he goes out and he works, you know, every single day and works hard. And you know, and I work hard and I get up early and I think about, you know, recipes. And, you know, it's honoring one another and our contributions to society. And it's honoring the, you know, the farmer who's growing the green onions. And it's just honoring the food for my kids. And it's just, to me, a much bigger issue than I need to go in and get dinner on the table for not a lot of money. That's sort of an incidental benefit, you know, in a sense.
Well, and like, so, you said, if you sort of present it that way, like, I have to spend $10 on dinner because I don't have any money, then you're presenting it like deprivation. And deprivation is really hard to maintain, even if you really don't have any money. So, you know.
Well, and to be clear, you know, a lot of these recipes are from that world for me. So, you know, I mean, I grew up, you know, without a lot of money and, you know, without, you know, we certainly didn't have steak, you know, when I was growing up. I mean, you know, none of that. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of this comes from that space. And I certainly appreciate that space. But I think that the philosophy is actually just bigger than that. It's right. not about, you know, a lot of people, or not a lot, it happens where people will say, oh, you know, you're so smart to do $10 dinners with, you know, with the economy being what it is. And there's a part of it just feels like, well, that's just, you know, that's almost the reverse. That's an incidental. I'm so glad to be a part of that conversation, because I do know that that's the reality and that the economy is there. But I'm not doing this because I thought, well, this will be smart. This will sell a lot of books because the economy is horrible. Right. That's just not the way I feel like I contribute to this world.
Right.
I really do feel like it's a bigger contribution than that in my mind. Now, you know, does everybody agree with me? No, the people who probably say, you know what, actually you're just, you know, a schmuck writing recipes with cheap ingredients. Well, you know, hey, that's great. It works on that level too. Exactly. You know, that's fabulous. You know, that's not what's going on in my mind when I write the recipes and when I'm, you know, doing the work that I do. That's not where my mind is playing.
I have to ask, and one thing that I learned from you was number 9 on your strategies for saving. I never thought to keep a lemon rind. I don't know. I just always threw them down the dishwasher disposal or the garbage disposal. It never occurred to me to freeze them and save them for zest. So thank you.
Just to let you know, throwing it down the garbage disposal is not really wasting it because
it makes it smell good.
Yeah. So, you know, true. Me, you know, I will tell you, I would say, you know, once every couple of weeks, I throw one down there too.
Yeah. Well, but you know, just, because I was like, doing a job. I was like, yay, yeah. That's like a cool, you know, I always feel weird about like, here's this, it looks so whole, like there's still so much in it. And I just didn't realize it could be frozen and still used later. So thank you. But I also wanted to ask if you have, you know, for example, things like dried beans. And I know that canned beans are also very inexpensive, and I often use canned, but I've always been meaning to use more dried. And there's just other little things like that, little things that I want to do a little differently, you know, like putting the grains on the night before, or what, just little things that people do to save money. And it's like I haven't found the system yet or something that will help me remember. Do you have like a system for that? Like if you're going to make something tomorrow, whatever helps you remember to soak the beans tonight, or just in general, how you plan out, not just your meal plan, but the workflow that has to go into the meal plan, because they're two different things, you know?
Yeah, I see exactly what you're saying. I will tell you my system, if you can call it that, because it's not very good.
Okay.
I'll tell you what works for me. And this is not just a food thing. It's just a thing in general. I know myself, if things aren't sort of written down or visually very obvious for me, I forget them. Like I know me, that's the way I work. I'm for as much as I feel like I am smart, I can be forgetful.
Mm-hmm.
So which, you know, as long as you know that about yourself, you can manage around that. So the way I manage around that is if I see it, then I remember it. So I put things out when I need to do them. So for instance, soaking beans, I put them out onto the counter, and that way I remember it. Because then, worst case scenario, I'm heading to bed and I'm cleaning up the kitchen. Because I also know me, I clean up the kitchen before I do a final check on the kitchen.
Right.
Like I want to make sure that the coffee's ready for tomorrow, and that you know, I just do a check. I like to wake up to a nice clean kitchen, so I always just make sure that there's not, you know, papers or whatever floating around. So I know that I will see it before I go to bed. So if there's something I need to do before I go to bed, I put it on the kitchen counter because I know that that's the last place I will look before I go to bed. I just know how I work. So I'm a big fan of, you know, I put the sour cream to the front of the fridge because if I open it up, I will see it. I'm somebody who, like, I need to see it. Mm-hmm. If I need to, you know, take something upstairs, but I'm not running upstairs, I just set it on the bottom stairs. And then I know me when I walk up the stairs and then I see it. I'm like, oh, that's right. That needs to be done. So I put things out where I can see it. And that's sort of, you know, my system. The other thing that I do is, when I'm checking like my freezer, I pull things out from the freezer and put it in the fridge when I know that, you know, oh, okay, you know, I don't want to make chicken in 2 days or whatever. I'll pull that out and put it into the fridge or whatever, you know, so that I see the fridge a lot more than I see the freezer.
Right.
And so that way I know it's visual. To me, I'm very visual. I put things where I can see it. If there's something really important, I'll attach it to my car keys. Because I know that I will, you know, I know that I'll need to go with I know I need to get the car keys before I go out the door. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I need to see it. I just need to see it. I'm a very, very visual person.
I'm the same way. And then that actually helps a lot because one thing, I can't keep my fridge too full. If I have too much going on in my fridge, it's like, forget it. Because then I can't see what's at the back and I'll literally forget. I'll just completely forget that things are in there. So.
Yep. Well, that's why I need to, that's why we need to, I know this. Well, here's the other thing. I'm a big mnemonic device person because okay. I am forgetful. Uh-huh. So I attach important things that I know that are important enough that I don't want to forget, but are not important enough that I know I could forget. So I attach small little habits that support the life I want to lead. I attach it to another event. So, for instance, anytime I go to the grocery store, before I get in the car to go to the grocery store, I do a 5-minute inventory check. So, okay. Like, I could be like, oh, I'm going to hop out and go whatever. I'm going to the grocery store. Oops, I forgot to go do that. I attach it to the event of going to the grocery store. So that way I don't get to the grocery store and say, oh, shoot, I didn't do my 5-minute whatever. Or worse, come home from the grocery store and realize that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I attach it to another event. So that's why, like, I attach things to my keys. Mm-hmm. I have to attach. There's got to be a word for that I don't know what it is. But
I'm sure there is. Yeah.
Small events to big events. Mm-hmm. So, how you change your batteries of your alarms
right.
on fallback spring forward mm-hmm. day. It's the same concept, except I do that sort of in everything in my life. So if there's something that is important, I'll put it right next to my running shoes because I know that I'm going running tomorrow or,
you won't leave to go running without your running shoes on. So
that's exactly right. So like the other thing that I do is, speaking of shoes, is I always put a shoe in, I've tweeted about this before and people are like, oh yeah, this happens to me, not all the time, but I put a shoe in hotel safe, because I usually have like my, any valuables or my computer in the hotel safe. Mm-hmm. And all you need to do is leave a hotel once where your computer is left in the hotel safe and you're like,
never doing that again.
So now I know I put my shoes in everything. Like even in the TSA bins, I put my shoes in the last of my bins because that way I know I won't be one bin short because I know I won't walk away without my shoes. So like I'm always attaching, I'm constantly managing to my forgetfulness.
Anytime
I get up from anything, like a table or a restaurant, whatever it is, once I get cleared of the rest, I always turn around and look at the table and look underneath the chair. Always. It's just something I do. It's just, I just know me. I have left my phone at restaurants. I have left my purse at restaurants. And so I just know that I kind of create this sort of like, well, when I get up and once I've cleared the table, I turn around and I look, I just always do that. I always look under a bed before I leave a hotel. I attach small little things to bigger things because I know I won't forget to leave the hotel.
Right.
But I will forget to come to the bed.
That would be a real problem.
Yeah. Like, I wonder why I'm not at my event. Yeah, I wonder what happened. Oh, I forgot to leave. So so I don't know if that helps you out, but I'm
that actually is very helpful.
I figure out the things that I know are the non-negotiables that I know I'm going to do, and I attach things to it.
Well, and I think that might help the 5-minute inventory thing. I think would really also help me remember the canvas bags, which I always have and always mean to take to the grocery store. And then I'm like at the grocery store, in like the third aisle, and I'm like, oh, I knew I forgot something.
Yeah. That's a really good idea because I am always forgetting that. And, and you're right. Like I that would be a good one for me to attach that to my 5-minute inventory.
Yeah.
The problem is that then we get into that tricky zone of I can't attach too many things because then what if I start
then
forgetting
something
the things
will
that I've
bump
attached?
Off the edge, right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it's just like, whenever I do abs, I always, do butt exercises, just small things, that I would just, it's just, I know me because I will forget to do them otherwise. Mm. It's funny how people sometimes say to me, oh my gosh, you're so good with names. And I'm like, actually, I'm horrible with names, but I'm so bad with names that I make it my business to really work at it. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how when you really make it your business to work at something, you really get better at it. So I know me, I'm a little bit forgetful about things and, you know, about the small stuff, because I'm a big picture person. I'm not a detail person. I'm much more of a leader than I am a manager. I'm much more of a visionary than an executor. Mm-hmm. So I know that my challenge is remembering all the, you know, all the little stuff. So I'm a big attacher. I hang the little stuff onto the big stuff, and that's what works for me.
That makes a lot of sense. And you know, that's actually one of the reasons I decided to start spending more time in the kitchen, hence my podcast, The Kitchen Hour, because I found that I was falling into this trap of trying to get dinner on the table as fast as possible. So, you know, it's kind of the thing now, like, oh, we're all so busy, like, go for the most convenience possible. So as I was spending less and less time actually in the kitchen, I was forgetting more and more things that had to do with dinner. So it was like, not just, you know, ingredients, but like I was forgetting to check my inventory. I was forgetting to clean out the freezer. I was forgetting, sometimes I was like forgetting to check if I had like cleaners or just these little things that happened in the kitchen just weren't getting done. So it was like, I needed to make that a commitment and like really say, this is something that's important to me. I'm going to do this. And then once I did, it was like, everything just kind of fell into place. It was where I put my energy. You know,
well, and
kind of
I think for
way.
Me, I agree. I could see myself in the exact same shoes, in the same position. For me, I have figured out that for me, my habits really dictate sort of how I do and how comfortable I am with my life. And my habits are almost more important than my bursts of inspiration and intention. So I have learn to, because I am a visionary, I'm much more of, I mean, my husband kind of jokes around, I'm always saying, you know what, I've got an idea.
Yeah.
What if, you know, I'm such a visionary and my challenge is the sort of the executing on that, which also gets to the whole thing of like writing a book, like, oh, I got a great idea. And then, you know, I really need to then actually do the execution on it. But because I'm, you know, I'm such a visionary of it, visionary just in general, like you, like if I get out of the habit of being in the kitchen and the whatever, like it just, it, you know, I then don't get stuff done that supports what I really want.
Right.
So all that to say, I've taken a healthy, I have a healthy appreciation for how my habits really matter more than I think I have, you know, over the years given them credit for. Developing good habits is, I think, one of the best, one of my favorite things that I do is in terms of supporting my success and supporting a lifestyle that I want, is having good habits, like you said, because you kind of then forget, what goes on the table?
What am I doing in here? Is this even my house?
Yeah, like even just last night, like it just is a random, very small example that it's not overly stressful, but it's a very small example. But my husband, he travels for work as well, not as much as I do, but he does travel for work, and he's out of town right now. And he is the one who makes the coffee at night, you know, puts the coffee together and sets up the timer so that in the morning we have coffee. Great. When he's not here, I don't have a system for making the coffee.
Right.
Other than, oh, getting everything ready to go to bed. I'm checking to make sure this coffee's done. Oh, the coffee's not done. Oh, I have to do it.
Right.
So in other words, I end up doing the coffee sort of, reactively to the event that I walk in to check the kitchen and make sure everything's fine before I go to bed. And not that it's a big deal, but you know, at 10:45 when you're like, oh, you're in your jammies and you just want to go to bed.
Right.
Like last thing I want to do is like, oh, I got to pull out the coffee and make it. I mean, it takes 3 minutes. It's not a big deal.
But it feels like a big deal. It's like grumpy making, right? Yeah.
It's a small thing, but it's just, you know what? I'm 44 years old. I've been drinking coffee for probably half of my life.
Right.
You know, you would think, I mean, and I've only been married for 10 years. So it's not as though I've had somebody making me coffee, you know, forever.
Right.
I'm a big girl. You know, I need to figure out a time or place or a way to make coffee so that it's not always, oh, shoot, I haven't made coffee. Like, it's like that every night that my husband's not here.
And, you know, that is one small thing, but imagine if your whole day was just one of those after the next.
That's like, exactly right. Yeah. And those small things, and so just last night I was saying, you know what, if I want to feel, you know, in order to support who I want to be and the kind of person I am, maybe that sounds like a very tiny example, and I'm just giving you a small example, but I just sort of said, you know what, I need to think about when the right time to do coffee is and incorporate it into my habits because it doesn't work for me after 44 years. It just doesn't work for me. And it's just, it's a small thing, but like you said, imagine that, you know, times 100 and imagine things that are, you know, more important. Like, I will tell you right now, I'm sitting at my desk looking and thinking, ugh, I got to clean up my desk. The truth is, you know, again, after 44 years, I don't have a really great system other than, ugh, I can't take it anymore. I'm taking out 20 minutes. I'm cleaning up my desk.
Right.
But that is very reactive. Mm-hmm. And that's not a habit that I'm, that I think supports who I want to be, at my desk. So, you know, that's just another example of, okay, is it the end of the world? No, but it's just not who I want to be.
It takes time. You know. It takes energy away from other priorities that, you know, you could be giving yourself to. And I know what you mean by that. It's like, why don't I just figure this out already? It's just like,
it has to be a habit.
Right.
I'm not good at just like, well, I'll just clean up my desk when it needs cleaning up.
Right.
No, because it just sits in a way, like I'm not in the habit and I get used to the mess and it just drives me nuts. You know, same thing like with working out. Like it's either a habit or it's not. I cannot depend on inspiration to strike me.
Right.
I know myself.
Absolutely.
You know, that's just, if I wait for inspiration,
you'll be waiting a long time.
I will be waiting a long time.
Or you'll work out like crazy for like a week and then.
That's right. That's
not
exactly
again for
right.
3 months.
And
yeah.
And that's just not what works for me. So as somebody who is more driven by vision and inspiration, those are the things that are honestly the biggest challenges for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all that little stuff that needs to get done that I need to work into my day so that I don't forget.
Right.
You know?
That makes a lot of sense. And
that's
challenge. And I really think that speaks to so many, I'm also a big picture thinker. And I think that for those of us like that, you know, just the process of anything having to do with parenting, but especially like this nighttime meal thing is making it the habit. Because if you don't, it's just way too, these days we have ultimate convenience at our fingertips. It's just too easy not to do it tonight. You know, it's just too easy to like get takeout tonight and then run through a drive-thru tomorrow. And then, you know, it's just too easy. Anybody can do it. So it's like, we have to kind of cement those habits. It's not like when our grandmothers or our great grandmothers like kind of had to get dinner on the table, you know, because there weren't any other options, you know.
And you know, and speaking of that, you know, when we talked about, you just talked about like, oh, you know, doing takeout or whatever. You know, I'm a believer in anything in moderation.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, it's not,
it's not like a religion.
No, yeah. For me it isn't. I understand. Right. I totally get the all or nothing. You know, I know parents who have kids have never had a chicken nugget in their lives and that's just not who I am.
Right.
But the difference is this. Is that, you know, when we, you know, call up and order in a pizza or whatever, it's because, you know, my kids are craving it and it's like a fun thing and we're doing it. You know, it's because my habits are, you know, my go-to, my fallback on a busy night is not takeout or drive-thru.
And then you can feel good about
at
it.
All.
Because then it's like a fun treat. It's not like a failure.
It is.
You know?
For me, it is. You know, and it's... For me,
I know we're all very different with that, but
you know, takeout as a convenience, you know, sort of strategy. Oh, my life is busy. It's not something that figures in because I have other strategies for that, and I think that's what, you know, it's sort of that habit. I've just developed a habit of having a different MO, a different go-to. I've got a different set of recipes. I've got whole grain pasta that I can mix up and, you know, and I can get dinner on the table and, you know, in 14 minutes or whatever. You know, I have other go-tos, but that doesn't mean that I don't ever, you know, get a pizza. In fact, my daughter, Charlotte, she says, you know, I'll make pizza on the grill for them or make pizza in the oven or we'll make our own pizza night. And then sometimes Charlotte will say to me, she's 6, you know, Mommy, can we get the pizza tonight where they come and they ring the doorbell?
Oh, that's,
you know,
so cute.
She wants delivery pizza. So
kind in a box, so, Mommy.
Yeah. So you know what? I'll tell you what. I have no problem with that. But
right.
I will tell you, you know, so I, you know what? We did movie night. In fact, we did movie night last night. It was my birthday last night.
Oh.
So we did movie night last night and Philippe's out of town. So I just did movie night with the girls and they all wanted pizza. I actually made my deviled eggs with a tuna tartare on top from my book.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And that's what I had was like my big treat. But they wanted, you know, they wanted Domino's pizza. Well, whatever, you know, fine.
Yeah.
So, you know what? We did it, but it was a conscious choice of, you know what? We're doing movie night. This is a treat for them. It's, you know, it's just about habits. It's just, you know, that could easily, my habit could easily be, you know, ordering out on a busy night. I just don't find it to be, you know, I don't find it to be faster.
And, it's not really. It is. But
it's
only faster when you have no other option because you haven't set yourself up. You know what I mean? Like, it's only faster when the other option is going grocery shopping at 6 o'clock. So,
totally agree. You know, but there is all, I mean, there's, you know what? Oh, I love this idea. What about this for a show? What about someone who's like, I swear I have nothing in my pantry, and then I'll go in and I will find you something in your pantry that you can make.
Hey, I like that idea.
You know, it's, I mean, there's, you know, honestly, who doesn't have pasta in their pantry? Now, in my perfect world, people would then be going out and buying whole grain pasta,
right,
so that way there's
going
to be kind of the extra fiber and the whatever, which is what that is a pantry staple for me. But, you know, I mean, I can get pasta on the table faster than, you know, Domino's can ever get a pizza to my
table.
That's
so true.
For sure. You know, and my kids will eat it. So, you know, I mean, this isn't about, like, kids. You know, the worst case scenario, you can get pasta on the table, can't you? And there's got to be something in your fridge or your pantry that you can, you know, saute up and toss a little bit of pasta and make something delicious.
Yeah, that's true.
Sometimes it's just
knowing what to go for. And sometimes I think we just give up too easily. Like I said, because we can, you know, the convenience is there. And I think sometimes it's also just a matter of, it's a matter of comfort in the kitchen. Sometimes I think when we have to develop that, it's like a muscle. And so you don't have like any of those things in your head where you're like, oh, I can just reach for this or reach for that or pull some chicken breasts out because I know what to do with them. Going back to your four-step process. you know.
And that's what I tell people is, you know what? Don't be so hard on yourself.
Right.
You know, start with having two backups instead of pizza.
Right.
You know, or instead of drive-through or whatever. You know, and save the drive-through for when you're like, oh my gosh, I'm bulimia. Like, I crave In-N-Out, you know, like, honestly, I get it. I mean, I totally get it. But you know what? In-N-Out is going to be a huge treat for me. It's not going to be because I drove through because I can't, you know, it's been a busy day.
Right.
But, you know, start with having one backup. I mean, at minimum, okay, you've got, you know, whole grain pasta you can make. I mean, you know, at least you can do that. Or even regular pasta, whatever it is. You've got pasta. Everyone has pasta in their cupboard.
Right.
So at least you got pasta. You can get that going. You know, and then next thing you know, keep a couple chicken breasts on. You can do four-step chicken. And now you've got a second option.
Yeah.
And then a third option. And pretty soon, you'll have those options for those, you know, kind of crazy, you know, busy Tuesdays. You know, go and get a rotisserie chicken. If you really want to go and get something already made and hot.
Do you really feel like you got to go to the store?
Yeah. I mean, but that's still better than, you know, that's still faster than getting in, you know, or ordering out pizza or whatever. I mean, if you really want to, you know, do that. And you will be amazed. You know, here's the other thing I've learned with developing habits. I am amazed if I am a little gentle on myself and say I don't have to do it perfectly, but I just do it a little bit. It's amazing how you get a little traction from being non-judgmental with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's when we start saying, oh, I didn't do it perfectly, or, oh, I'm, you know, I suck, or I'm not. That does not enable traction to come into play. But if you start a good habit in a very small way and don't judge, honestly, you get traction like you wouldn't believe. And next thing you know, you'll be floored. You'll be like, you know what? We sat down and had to, you know, I'll
tell
you what.
Little successes build on little successes.
You know what? They do.
Yeah.
If you order out pizza, do this. Well, at least say, okay, so I ordered out pizza. It is what it is. But you know what? Sit down around a table.
Sit down around the table
and eat the pizza.
I love that.
So that's a small step.
Yeah.
You know what? If you've ordered the pizza out or you've gotten the burgers or whatever, don't then just be like, okay, everybody have your burger and watch TV.
Whatever,
sit around the table. At least you're doing that.
Right.
Start small. People feel like they have to do things so well to start. And I say start at the speed of molasses because you will be amazed at how much traction you will get and the changes you can make in your life if you just start small.
I love that. Well, we have to wrap up because we've been chatting for a really long time.
It's been
great. It's been so fun. I did want to ask you just because we're filming the Earth filming this. We're going to air this right before Thanksgiving. Is Thanksgiving a big deal in your house?
I love Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving is one of my favorite holidays. I love it. I have to tell you, I have this fantasy of doing Thanksgiving on the beach. I saw it in like Sunset Magazine or like
Coastal
Living or something
San Diego,
a couple years ago.
So you could actually do that.
Yes. No, I know. I actually can in terms of proximity.
Right.
So last year I thought, oh, I'm going to do Thanksgiving on the beach. Like, wouldn't that be cool? Like, we all wear, you know, to like a bonfire and like bring everything already made. And like, I have this like vision of doing it. Mm-hmm. And last year I thought, oh, no, maybe next year I'll do it. So I'm suddenly looking at the calendar and realizing, okay, Thanksgiving's coming up. And I actually don't think I'm going to do it. But I have a vision.
You have a vision. Hey, you know what? Maybe after dinner, you could just go to the beach. And then next year, maybe you could have your appetizer on the beach or dessert on the beach, you know.
You know, like, what? I think you are onto something. I think I should take my own advice, which is, you know what? I feel like if I can't do the whole big thing like they had in whatever magazine I saw, I feel like, oh, I'm not going to do it at all. But you're right. You know what? Why don't I just take, you know, pumpkin pie and s'more stuff and go do a bonfire after, you know?
Absolutely.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that. That's fantastic. I love that
idea. I think it's a fantastic idea. But anyway, yes, I love Thanksgiving. I love, you know what I love about it? I love that it's really just about the fall smells and foods, and it's about family coming together.
There's no other agenda. That's all there is.
And it's not, you know, and don't get me wrong, I love Christmas and I love, you know, I love all that, but it's in it. I love family birthday gatherings, but you know, I love that there are no presents. I love that it's just us.
It's just very simple.
And to me, it really does kick off the holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
We always go the day after Thanksgiving and get our Christmas tree. And usually it's the week or two after Thanksgiving where I do my mother-daughter holiday tea. Annual mother-daughter holiday tea. So it's the kickoff of that. So I'm like, I'm really cooking a lot. And I love the smells of pumpkin spices. And I love all
of
that.
You're making me hungry. Do you have a standout, like your favorite dish that you serve or that somebody else in your family serves for Thanksgiving?
Well, I will tell you this, that I have spent the past maybe 10 years trying to make the perfect turkey.
Oh, gosh.
And I've, you know, we've had big Thanksgivings where we've done multiple turkeys, or, you know, my sister lives a few doors down and she has 5 kids. And so, you know, we eat them, you know, we have these big, you know, 25 people, you know, it's just kind of our families getting together and then, you know, whatever. So it just gets big quickly. So we'll make, you know, 3 turkeys or whatever. So I will tell you that last year, I mean, we have definitively decided that Alton Brown's brined turkey is by far the best turkey to make. Last year, I want to say we made 4 turkeys, and we did 4 different, you know, major different processes, and, you know, I really turned it into a science experiment. And so I feel like I left last Thanksgiving super excited about the fact that, you know what, I can now let the project go because I, after 10 years of all these different guys, that's
found
what
it.
I want to do. Yeah.
I think so that comes up really high if you Google, by the way, just for listeners.
It does.
It's like the first, I think it's one of the very first recipes that comes up if you Google Thanksgiving turkey.
Yes, it does. And rightfully so. But in all fairness, you know, there are a lot of really good turkey recipes that you're sort of like, okay, that's very good. And people will say that's the only one they made and it was very good.
How long do you have to brine it?
But it's, I want to say 2 days. I don't know. You know,
maybe that's
I
why I didn't make that one.
I don't know. Well, this is what I was saying. As I was doing 4 turkeys, so I thought, well, I'm going to make this, an experiment. And I got the same turkey, and I treated, you know what I mean? So it was truly you know, a Cook's Illustrated type of experiment at my house. And it's one thing when you make one turkey one, you're like, oh, that's great. But then, you know, it's a year before the next one. That's really not a fair experimental condition. But making all 4 of them side by side, it really made me very excited about
them all,
the fact that I can drop all others.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, that's I'm gonna have that in the show notes. I'll put a link to the Alton Brown recipe and.
Honestly. I mean,
and the only reason
I didn't make
it last year is because I didn't look the recipe up until, like, I think the day before, and so it was too late to start the brining, which is another, you know, reminder that planning ahead and habits really help.
So. Well, with Thanksgiving, you really kind of have to.
Yeah,
but,
you have to.
You know,
Yeah, like the year that...
Don't even get me started about the first year after my twins were born, how I realized that my turkey was still, you know, frozen, the, you know, like the morning of.
Yeah, I was just going to say, my sister and I did the same thing a few years ago. We were going to do this huge dinner, and we gave the turkeys like 3 days to defrost, and it didn't.
Me too. I just didn't realize that in the inside it was still, you know. So, like, literally, like, I'm, like, practically calling, like, 1-800-BUTTERBALL. Like, it wasn't. But I'm like, who's going to know about a frozen turkey? So,
right.
Anyway. Yeah. So I had to do, like, the fast thaw where you're, like, changing out the water every 20 minutes. I mean,
yeah.
It's, like, a huge PIA. I do not recommend.
Yeah.
But anyway, whatever.
Planet.
And, in fact, if I recall correctly, now I think about it, like, my twins, so they were still zero. So the girls were 1 and 2. The big girls were 1 and 2. As I recall correctly, I think that I just finally gave up and said, you know what, I'm putting the turkey back into the fridge and we're eating it tomorrow. Like, I finally just was like, you know what, well, you know, whatever. These kids do not care, and it's just my husband and me and the 4 kids. And I think we had Thanksgiving a day late that year. Like, I just think I was like, I can't take it on. I've got 4 babies who are all in diapers. Whatever, this will happen tomorrow.
Yeah, and
so
you know
we,
what?
Like, canceled Thanksgiving.
It's a good memory. When we did it, we ended up having ham and a lot of mimosas. So,
yeah, you know, whatever,
out.
Go with the flow.
It was still a
anyway,
good memory.
Well, I so appreciate you chatting with me for
this
so long.
I hope I didn't take up all of your recording space. Your time. This was really fun. I know I told you it'd be like a half an hour, and instead I kept you on for like an hour. So I hope you didn't have anything else going on this afternoon that, you know, is now getting left. But this is very, very fun. And everybody, again, it's Melissa Di Arabian. The book is $10 Dinners, as well as the show on the Food Network. Look her up. Melissa, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
You too. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Kitchen Hour podcast. Make sure to check out thekitchenhour.com for more podcasts, plus videos, posts, recipes, and other great tips and ideas.